Hi, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. We had some issues with our streaming earlier, but we're back up and running now. So you can watch along if you wish on our website, highlandradio.com, and our social media platforms as well. Now, we were talking just before the news at 10 about the active travel project planned for Ballymacool. Some of you have been in touch in relation to that. Let's look at the reality of the future, which is parking outside your home in a main residential area. Is a luxury, not a right. But I suppose those residents, you know, that's different if there is new developments coming on stream. But if you live in a house, you've purchased a house where there is parking, you obviously want to retain that parking. Another listener says, so how do you bring home your groceries and a baby home at one time? Clearly the baby will have to be left alone for a period of time. Where are you supposed to park your car? It's all right if we had a great public bus system. The people did need cars, but the reality is we all need a car. And in relation to that, baby, and bringing home your shopping there, what if it is, you know, if there's torrential rain and you're walking home with the baby and walking home then with your groceries and back and forward? And as I think it was John was saying, he's a resident in Ballymacool, that, you know, they've proposed 26 parking spaces, but yet he walked along the route and there was 30 or just over 30 cars parked in the area. So there's obviously a greater need that needs to be met there if the parking was to be relocated elsewhere. Another listener says, let's face it, the car park will be used for people attending matches and overflow from the aura. That's what John raised concern about as well. Where will that leave the homeowners? Look at the mess of Ballymacool housing estate when a game is on. We've talked about that previously as well. And, you know, in the case of an emergency, you know, where do the emergency services go as well? So, you know, it's very difficult then if there's no parking outside a house, what happens in that instant? Surely the car park area should be purchased before the parking outside the homes is done. It's putting the cart before the horse. Surely the parking bay should be in place first. What about people with disabilities? How will they get into their homes? Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked into the full detail of the proposals, but John was saying as well that, you know, there's already three residents that need a disabled parking bay and they've proposed two. So obviously one of them will have to choose whether they avail of the parking as well. And, you know, I'm not sure, is it a mobility issue or why they have use of a disabled parking bay, but surely expecting them then to walk from the designated parking area to their homes, you know, you shouldn't expect anybody to do that. Morning, Michaela. I'm also a Ballymacool resident and I travel that road every morning. The reality is we don't need cycle lanes as no one cycles or walks to school or work. The children travel by school bus and people drive. The cycle lanes in our town are not used as it is. We need our roads widened and that's where the money should be spent. It's a case, another listener says, of spending this money no matter what kind of a mess they make of Letterkenny. The roads outside your house, which is usually the footpath or verge, is owned by the council and is considered a public space. Show me one flat or home in Dublin that has parking outside their home, another listener says. The reality is the public have had these benefits for years, but parking is not an entitlement. In Lick, we were told 7.5 years ago that the road would be widened. The residents will have nothing to worry about as there will be no work commencing for at least 10 years. In Lick, a lot of our residents have now passed on and nothing was ever done. Well, I suppose if the plans are proposed, they're inviting, you know, last week they had the meeting hosted by the council, inviting submissions from residents and any other interested parties to make their submissions known. So, you know, to raise these concerns, but it might be a couple of years before any works are carried out. But at least hopefully you would like to think that the concerns of residents and businesses in the area and anybody who frequents that area will be taken on board and hopefully a solution found that meets, that everybody can meet in the middle, or just that the residents are properly catered for. In relation to traffic in Letterkenny, we need white lines done along the road to see what the changes would look like. It will show where the road will be narrowed and widened. Public meetings are also needed. Well, yeah, there was a public meeting hosted by the council last week. And, you know, in the plans put forward, they do highlight and draw up where the proposed changes would be and where the road realignments would be carried out as well. The main issue with traffic in Letterkenny is that we need relief roads. So many roads have been started and never finished. The relief road in Glen Ochty and Glen Carr was started 25 years ago and still isn't finished. Another listener says, in relation to a different matter, I live in a rural area and there's constant domestic rubbish dumping for years and nothing is ever done about it, no matter how many times it's reported. That's in relation to an item on our news today, in relation to dumping in West Donegal. Another listener has been in touch with regards parking. Sure, this parking system won't be abused. Sure, this is Ireland after all. So we were talking at the start of the show about Councillor Jimmy Brogan and Anna Gallagher, the Donegal Town Mayor, were discussing introducing sunflower parking in Donegal Town. So that would cater for people who have some mobility issues, maybe they're autistic, that they just need that small bit of support to help them in their day-to-day activities. So it wouldn't be run like disabled parking bays. You wouldn't need a badge or a card to indicate that you can avail of this parking space, but it would be like a child and family parking space that you would hope people wouldn't abuse it, but they would be available for those who need it. Another listener says, as a granny of two autistic boys, I'm delighted to hear this good news this morning. Taking them shopping can be a difficult experience. So that's obviously who they would be trying to help with regards to the sunflower parking, to make it easier for that granny and her two grandsons going shopping. And it's just to make sure, you know, they're near where they need to be and just to ease life a bit for them. Just a mention, so Rafoe Heritage Town is on Nationwide on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. So across the country, there's growing interest among communities and businesses in restoring traditional shop fronts and dwellings. Reporter Mary Hard visits two of Donegal's heritage towns where revitalisation efforts are underway with support from the government's Town and Village Renewal Scheme. So that is 7 p.m. this Wednesday on RTE Nationwide. So make sure to tune into that. Somebody has been in touch with regards to Garda vetting. They say, I completely agree that Garda vetting is so important. It keeps everyone safe and accountable. But I'm just wondering, why do facilitators have to go through the Garda vetting process multiple times for different organisations or venues? Each application takes time and care to fill out, and it's usually the same information over and over again. Wouldn't it make sense to have a central system where you're vetted once a year, receive a clearance number and can present that wherever you work or volunteer? It could really cut down on admin time while still keeping the system safe and reliable. I'm not saying vetting shouldn't be done, just that maybe it could be done smarter. What do others think? Is this something we could lobby to improve, a more streamlined system that actually talks to each other? Yeah, that proposal does make some sense. I'm not sure of, obviously, you know, having to get the Garda vetting done every time you do apply for something. There is a reason for that, but we'll be discussing that issue on our Community Garda slot in the coming weeks. Now, this week, the country will take to the polls to select the next president of Ireland. It's a two-horse race with Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly in the running. But a man who is no stranger to covering elections is John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you?
Good. Are you excited or not, John?
It's difficult to get excited. It's very difficult to get excited. We're into the final days of the polls. It's a four-week race. And it has never reached any great heights of any intellectual debate or discussion. I suppose the debate has got dragged down to a great extent by accusations, mainly coming from the Heather Humphreys team, perhaps not from herself as such. But it seems over the weekend, and ever since Thursday night or Thursday morning when the Ipsos MRBI poll came out for the Irish Times showing that Heather Humphreys was on 20% as opposed to 38% for Catherine Connolly and 5% for Gavin, the campaign has ramped up in a very, very negative manner.
Do you think this indicates desperation from Heather Humphreys?
Oh, definitely. Heather Humphreys, as a cabinet minister and as a politician, has been a very outgoing, a very, very nice person, a very friendly person. The campaign team seems to have just put that aside and just gone for the jugular here. Just thinking about, you know, the whole issue of Saturday and yesterday, Catherine Connolly being called on to reveal the details of the of the housing repossessions that she represented mm-hmm. as a member of the bar, knowing fine well, and this has been articulated by some very senior barristers in recent days, but I talked to a senior barrister last night and they simply just said that all of those issues are totally confidential and barristers are duty-bound to keep the details of their clients in total confidence. Otherwise, their behaviour will be called into question.
Mm-hmm.
And the only circumstance where that can be changed is if a court order would deem it necessary that it would be a benefit to the general public. That doesn't happen. So where this campaign is going, there's a video out this morning that I haven't seen yet. So this is just a very dirty tricks campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine Connolly has done nothing to deserve that. I'm not saying that Heather Humphreys fully supports what's going on here, but it looks like the whole public relations team of Fine Gael is lined up to shoot down Catherine Connolly's attempt to get into the presidency.
And in fairness to Catherine Connolly, you know, she's been met with so many different things. You know, her trip to Syria has been raised and her employment of someone who had a firearms conviction, you know, this has all been thrown at her, and I suppose she did expect this. And, you know, she does seem to have handled that relatively well and has moved on from it.
She hasn't been allowed to move on from it because, we're into a whole campaign of negativity. She is probably, in many ways, and I'm not a big fan of either Catherine Connolly or Heather Humphreys,
mm-hmm.
but I suppose at the end of the day, we'll go to the polls and we'll vote for one of them,
mm-hmm.
and they'll make fine presidents. It is this attack, and it just smacks of a total negativity that the presidency deserves better than that, you know, as
yeah.
the highest office in the land.
Yeah.
Catherine Connolly has been articulate, probably not as much as she should be at times. I suppose she has hesitated on the television debates, and she has taken time to consider things that probably with better advice, she would have just confronted those things head on because she would have the experience and the expertise to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Heather Humphreys is from a very different gene pool of senior Fine Gael politicians, a government minister for 10 years, you know, and she was a delight to meet, and she touched base so well with communities. That has all gone out the window.
Yeah.
And I think it has damaged her campaign immensely. And
do you think this is obviously coming from the background team as opposed to, you know, I've heard, as you mentioned there, Heather Humphreys, I've heard so many people that have met her saying that she is such a lovely lady. But then we obviously have this element of the campaign now.
That was going to build up that way because it was there probably in the background before Thursday's poll results came out.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Connolly took control of that very first debate with Humphreys and Jim Gavin by being her own quiet self and just responding to the questions and not using any brickbats or throwing any doubts or casting any shadows on anybody. She won that debate hands down. Heather Humphreys effectively went missing on that debate, and Jim Gavin was just very overactive and probably not articulating his point of view all that well. So the presidency got off to that kind of an unusual start. And then, of course, Gavin was forced to stand down, and it became just a contest between the two remaining candidates. It was almost a game of three halves. But no, the electorate will deliver their verdict, and I think people will have to reflect on where they're at and how they handle this thing.
Mm.
And, I mean, headlines for the sake of headlines in national papers doesn't win elections for you.
Yeah.
That's where Fine Gael has been at with this. And Micheál Martin then rowing into it yesterday at the Bordenstown celebrations. And, you know, at that point, he was just launching a veiled attack on Catherine Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're either a European or you're not. He was almost talking about, you know, you can't be in opposition to the EU project. Not to be further from the truth. I mean, we're not living in a unitary state where one party controls everything and nobody else is involved. And that was the veiled threat that I was getting from him yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose
where we go from that now in these few days, it'll not. I don't think it'll get any better.
Mm. But in terms of voter sentiment, John, there seems to be no momentum here at all.
There never was from day one.
Mm.
That goes to the selection process, and we've talked and we've talked about this before, you know, they've had 7 years to prepare for this election, knowing fine that it's going to come up exactly with 7 years, unless one of the incumbent presidents resigns or dies in office or something like that there. But it seems pretty obvious that the terms around the selection of candidates is out of date. And herein lies a big, big problem. It's a constitutional problem. The same applies to the number of TDs in the Dáil. We could have 190 after the next election. And they'll be coming out of the ceiling because there's nowhere else for them to go. These things have needed reform for the past 25 years. You know, the Constitution was from 1937 at a completely different time. Communications and contact and messaging with people didn't exist. So we've never looked again at it. Now is going to be the time once this election is over. The other one that's been drawn into this year is ever since the Good Friday Agreement, there was a lot of talk, a lot of sentiment that the people of Northern Ireland should have a vote in the presidential election. They're as further away from getting a vote in it as they were in 1998 when the Good Friday Agreement came in. And I think that in itself is one issue that should have been tackled. It would have given a whole new dimension to inclusivity for the people of Northern Ireland.
Because so many people in the North, you know they can't vote in the presidential election, but they look at the president as their president.
Do, of course. And you see, the positivity for them is that they want to vote and they want to be part of it. There's no good reason why they can't be. There's been no commission set up. There's been nothing happening except just stonewalling all the way. It's the same with the border poll, although that's a much bigger issue. But, you know, it's 20 years after the Good Friday Agreement, we've done nothing to set up a single...
Are you there, John? Your line drop? I think John's line dropped there, so we might maybe try and get him back again. But yeah, as John was saying there, there's no real excitement at all. You know, I remember obviously the local and the general election, there was great momentum. And for weeks, you know, we're 4 days out from whenever people can cast their vote. And, you know, for weeks there was such momentum, there was such a build up. But there just doesn't seem to be. And even there's some figures which show past election voter turnout. So in 1990, the voter turnout was 64.1%. In 1997, it was 47.6%. And in 2011, it was 56.1%. And the last presidential election was 43.9%. So it just shows the interest dropping, and you know, I suppose we've seen that in different elections as well. John, you're back on the line there.
Yeah, I'm back again. Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on this morning.
You're fine, me either. We're having technical issues all around.
Yeah. The reality here is, Michaela, that voter sentiment has been falling across general elections, local elections, and presidential elections. And there's probably reasons for that. There are probably reasons that are outside of our control, and that the electoral register may be seriously out of kilter. The new electoral director has offered the opinion last year that it may be oversubscribed by 500,000 people. Okay. Now, that would have a major impact, on the population, on the dynamic of the constituencies and all of that thing, and on the number of TDs. Now, you're saying that 43.9, just under 44% the last time.
Yeah.
We've been estimating that it's going to be down by as much as 10% at this time, unless there's a real landslide of support either way. There's no sentiment out there. Nobody wants to talk about the presidency. They see no purpose in it and they see no point in it. Do we want a presidency or do we not? Like, that needs to be a debate. Do we need a presidency or do we not? You know, like, at the end of the day, if it's worth having a presidency, then we have to look at the work of the president. I think Neil Martin, as a Taoiseach, has failed to do anything about that. He's been Taoiseach for, and Leo Varadkar as well, and Enda Kenny, and now Simon Harris. They have not addressed that crisis, because if the numbers turning up at the polling stations fall under 40%, there's a real crisis.
Yeah.
And
And that's a clear message from the people. Yeah, you know, people use their vote to send their message, but not using their vote is obviously another clear message that there's no interest in this and, you know, something needs to be done.
You know, there's a very clear message around, this is the first time I've heard this, there was a lot of criticism of the selection process that's out there, where people like Maria Steen and people like that were denied getting on the ballot paper. Mm-hmm. Now, that is well within the constitutional limits to do that. Simon Harris imposed a whip on the Fine Gael members not to support any candidate other than Fine Gael.
Mm-hmm.
Fianna Fáil probably didn't do that officially, but unofficially they probably just weren't going to vote for another candidate anyway.
But
the public are reading into that. The public are reading into that. A very sceptical public is reading into that. That this is a very inclusive club, and if you don't belong to mainstream politics, then you don't belong in the race for the presidency. Catherine Connolly bucked that trend by going very early last July, putting her stall out there. She had no real support at the time. And gradually, by going out and putting in a very, very big campaign behind the scenes to garner support from that broader left bloc. And with Sinn Féin finally coming on board, that gave her campaign a very, very big strength. But she had People Before Profit, she had Labour, she had the Social Democrats, and she had all of the left bloc right behind her.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that the main party leaders see that carried into a general election as being a serious threat. So they've got to try and confront it and to try and stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Can they do that now? I think the campaign right now is more about how can we stop this, and that how can we elect the best candidate, how can we sort of encourage the electorate to go out and vote on Friday.
Yeah,
and all we can do is just join and advise the people. Whatever you do, go out and vote, because I mean, we fought very hard for 800 years to have that right to our own democratic principles.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with you on that. Yeah, that no matter who you're going to vote for, you need to use that vote.
You see, there's no real issues have emerged in this campaign. Trust or enthusiasm.
I think I'm actually losing John again there, unfortunately. That was editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune, John McAteer, who is one of the most knowledgeable people on elections that I have ever met. So he was just giving his insight into how the presidential election campaign is going so far. And obviously, we only have two candidates here. I feel that there's just been... Yeah, as I was saying, no momentum at all. But maybe, you know, we didn't have anybody locally throwing their name into the hat. And, you know, Piers Doherty was, his name was lobbied around. But I suppose that kind of gave us an interest here in Donegal. But 4 days until people can have their say. Lots of you have been in touch on the matter. I'm voting neither of the two, but the reality is Connolly represented the Vulture Fund banks and nothing can change that. Shame Sinn Féin for supporting her. Pearce may keep his mouth shut in future about banks, says that listener. Had Marie Steen stood, she would have won the popular vote in Donegal and possibly the presidency. If this post has to have any future credibility, the nomination system has to change dramatically where the public get a say in who can stand, not just the political elite. That's what John was saying, that obviously, you know, the voter turnout is dropping consistently and he expects it to drop again this time out. So, you know, it's a clear sign that, you know, John was saying about the selection process, that needs to be reviewed. Catherine Connolly and other listeners said the presidency should not be associated with a political party. Why are the people who are canvassing for her wearing Sinn Féin jackets? Well, I suppose Sinn Féin have endorsed her as the candidate that they're supporting. So I suppose why would they not wear Sinn Féin jackets? Hello, that man is so right. Heather has people round her that are not nice. Catherine is coming across as a very decent human being. Votes in this house will go to Catherine. Thank you, says that listener. Another, more money from the taxpayers' wages in relation to the president. And the Catherine Connolly campaign should seriously investigate Heather Humphreys and her husband's involvement and attendance in Orange Lodges. Last week at Lifford Roundabout, I noticed four posters for Heather Humphreys and they were defaced with a large X a large X. In Carrigart and Downings, there are no posters for Heather. Joe McHugh, former Fine Gael minister, and Noel McBride, former Fine Gael county councillor, live here. Has Fine Gael no respect for their candidate? Well, I presume this was led from a national level, so I don't know what involvement people would have had here locally. Another listener says, Catherine Conley is a left-leaning candidate. When the left have a disagreement, they get angry and retaliate. Enoch Burke encountered Catherine Conley at the weekend. Catherine's supporters got angry and physical with Enoch then. We also saw this at the protests in Letterkenny. The left don't like it when people disagree with them. Just look at them shooting Charlie Kirk in the neck because they disagreed with him. The left get violent if they don't get their way. Well, that's the view of that listener. Another listener says, the question that needs to be asked for are two female candidates for President of Ireland. I know this sounds crazy, but what is a woman? What is a woman? Mainstream media is not touching it. It's over social media. Where do they stand on gender fluid? We are down to two candidates for president. One, the official Safe Hands regime candidate who will never rock the boat on EU corruption, while the other one has some still unanswered questions dealing with her repossessions of homes while working for the British banks. Can Ireland simply not do better? It does not say anything for democracy in the real world. That's the view of another listener there. Now, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. I'm joined now in studio by Brian Marshall, who is the PRO of Toastmasters in Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you?
I'm good. So I suppose, Brian, for anybody who doesn't know, what is Toastmasters?
We would describe Toastmasters as the biggest self-help club for improving your public speaking skills mm-hmm. in the world.
And who avails of this?
Oh, we've got everybody from doctors in the hospital to students to I'm an ex-farmer. We have got dental technicians. We have got absolutely everybody.
Yeah. So I suppose anybody who needs to communicate at all. So anybody that is interested, what kind of resources or classes as such do you provide to people?
Toastmasters itself, once you've decided to join, and we never put any pressure on guests to join. Guests can come to our meetings mm-hmm. for a couple of times. They'll be invited to join after that. But after they do join, there is an online program called Pathways.
Okay.
Pathways takes your public speaking journey. It can be designed to your own specific needs. So you're somebody in a team at work mm-hmm. and wants to communicate, or if you're a leader that wants to actually be able to organise your speeches and presentations to your workforce, we can cater for that. And the Pathways programme takes you from basics of public speaking right through to leadership skills if you need those.
Yeah, and that's perfect, I think, because I always say to people, like, I know I do this job, but I couldn't get up in a room and speak in front of the amount of listeners that we have. I would be really daunted by that. So I suppose that's great because, you know, there's so many different elements. People can tailor it exactly. You know, I'm a grand communicator, I think, but that front-facing thing of getting up in front of speaking to people. So that is good. You can tailor it to your own specific needs.
Yes, you can tailor it to your own specific needs. We're not going to try to make a specific type of public speaker.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be the best public speaker that you can be in your own style.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to try to make you do this, do that, or do the other. We are trying to make you feel comfortable in your own style of presentation and your own style of delivery. And that's very important because we don't want to try to fit people into boxes.
Yeah. And aside from the programme, you have meetings as well every week here in Letterkenny. So what kind of things do you discuss at the meetings?
The meetings will be three parts. The first part will be prepared speeches. So that gives someone the chance to speak before between 5 and 7 minutes on a topic that they have researched on a speech that they have written
okay.
and to present. The second part of the meeting is what we call table topics. Table topics is where you speak on 10 seconds notice for up to 2 minutes right. on the topic that the topics master fires at you. This gives you the real experience of the life situation
where you're put on the spot
mm-hmm. and you're asked to speak. So that's for up to 2 minutes. The third part of the meeting, we evaluate absolutely everything. So the speakers will be evaluated, the role takers in the meeting, from the timekeeper to the president to the actual person who takes the meeting, will be evaluated on their performance, because without feedback, we don't improve.
Yeah.
So the sheer repetitiveness of it gives you a continuity and allows you repeat. And the more you repeat, the more you stand up, the more you contribute to the meeting and speak, the better your public speaking confidence
makes people more comfortable, And I suppose that's the aim. So anybody interested in, you know, getting involved, say signing up for the programme or coming along to these meetings, how can people get in touch?
People can contact me, which my details are on our Facebook page. But if they just turn up, we invite people to come in. The first and third Tuesday of every month, Studio B at the Community Centre at 7:15. At 7:15, first and third Tuesday of every month, Studio B at the Community Centre. And we invite everyone. Just come. Make sure that it's right for you.
Yeah.
And then we'll invite you to join after a couple of meetings.
And I presume you'll be able to help those people to tailor their own, you know, you can identify their needs as well to help them tailor what they want from the programme.
Yes. And the actual pathway selection, whenever you go into the online to actually choose what sort of a pathway you progress on to your eventual aim, will have aims and, I will put it, wants, that you can choose the pathway that suits you. If your aim is to be a leader in a company, that'll be one pathway. If you just want to make a speech at a wedding or a eulogy at a funeral, which I've done myself.
Yes,
you can do that. And there's competitions in it, that if you want to enter competitions and get that buzz from competing in public speaking, there's four different types of competitions that you can enter as well.
Plenty of food for thought then.
Yes, plenty.
Brian Marshall, PRO of Toastmasters in Letterkenny, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And just a reminder that the meetings are the first and third Tuesday of the month in Studio B of the Community Centre in Letterkenny at 7:15 p.m.
That's this Tuesday.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhinney's. Our Christmas shop has now opened for all your festive shopping needs. Explore our extensive range of decorations, bedding and more in our homeware department, in-store or shop online at McElhinney's.com today.
Today's weather, sunny spells and showers after some early mist and fog patches. Highest temperatures of 12 to 14 degrees with mostly light north to northwest winds backing west. Now, Gardaí will from this week be able to issue fixed charge notices for licence plate offences. And Garda Síochána Press Office confirmed the issuing of notices can now be facilitated by the Garda Mobility app. The move follows the passage of the 2023 Road Safety Act, which included penalties for drivers who do not comply with the law on appropriate front and back licence registration plates, including colour, shape, design and font. I'm joined now by Susan Gray, who is chairperson of the Park Road Safety Group. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Michaela.
So, Susan, this is obviously something you would greatly welcome.
Yes, it's great news today. We were contacted by a member of the public in June asking us to raise this with the government because it was a massive loophole. they were noticing a massive increase in illegal and non-compliant number plates. So the guards had said that they were still waiting on an amendment in the 2023 Road Traffic Act to be implemented by the Gardaí officials. They were waiting on them to update their ICT systems so that the Gardaí could issue fixed charge notices and summonses via their new mobility device that they got in 2019. So I contacted Deputy Emer Curry, Fingale TT, and she immediately raised it with our Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan. And his reply on the 8th of July was that he was informed by Garda officials that the Gardaí could not issue fixed charge notices for this offence, but that they were working on updating their ITC system and it should be in play by the end of the year. So the same Deputy Curry then raised it at the Transport Committee on Road Safety on the 8th of October. And she raised it with the Deputy Commissioner and the Assistant Commissioner for Roads Policing who attended that meeting. And this is the result now, we believe, that a law that was passed over 2 years ago has finally been implemented. And now the Gardaí on the ground can, if they spot a vehicle with a number plate that's illegible or
and Susan, would this have related
front and back?
Would this have related as well to automatic number plate recognition? Would that have been obscured by these number plates?
Of course it would, and the speed cameras as well. Mm. If they can't read your number plate, they can't issue a fixed charge notice. So it's beggars belief that it's 2 years after an amendment was put into the law that we're only getting that now. So over 2 years ago, a law came in whereby the guards could automatically see insurance policies. And by scanning your registration number, they could tell, without stopping you, they could tell if your insurance had lapsed. Mm-hmm. Or if you had an invalid insurance company, and then they would pull you over and prosecute you. Mm-hmm. But if they can't read the number plate, then they can't tell if your insurance is valid or not. And the same with the speed cameras. So this is a massive step forward, Michaela, for road safety. Massive. And the guards started implementing it now. So those that are disguising their number plate for whatever reason, the guards now have the ability to pull you over, issue a €60 fine if it's a legal front number plate and another 60 for the back number plate.
Yeah.
Now, €120 doesn't seem much, and you would think drivers won't be worried about that. They will be, because they can be pulled over now.
Yeah, and the cost of, you know, they have to replace them number plates then as well. So that's an additional cost on them.
Yeah, but the bigger picture here is when they're pulled over, the guards then can check their insurance disc and their license or their permit. They can discover other laws that you have broken.
Yeah.
So once they can identify and pull you over, then it could open up a can of worms for some drivers that are breaking a lot of laws.
And I suppose that's the main point of this, that, you know, we can crack down and improve road safety.
Yes, and we'd love to thank Marie O'Halloran, who covered this in the front page of the Irish Times today, and Michael Murphy, who's the chair of the Ruckus Transport Committee. He ensured that this issue was brought up on the 8th of October. And Emer Curry for asking the questions, because we don't think we may well be waiting a long time if this hadn't of, you know, been pushed since June.
Would have continued.
And this is the way forward to work with. We will continue working with Deputy Curry and Deputy Michael Murphy and the media to highlight these things, because more often than enough, Michaela, it takes the media,
yeah, that pressure
to home on what's happening to get these things over the line.
Mm.
It shouldn't be this way, but it seems to be very often it's the way forward. So
yeah. Well, a positive step with that confirmation in a way. Susan Gray, chairperson of Park Road Safety Group, thank you so much for joining me this morning.